see, let's talk about it. Conversations lit, ain't no doubt about it. I have my fork and my spoon. Give me what's on your plate, 'cause I'm here for the food. Sprinkle it with love, sex and politics. We eat everything, I mean you is the shit. Season real good, like I said it's lit. Give me what's on your plate, 'cause I'm here for the food.
What's up, everybody? This is I'm Here for the Food, where we discuss topics that feed your mind, your spirit, and your soul. I am your host, Melissa Ford, and I am going to be joined in a couple of moments by a very, very good sister friend of mine. Some of you may know her from Love and Hip Hop, the Atlanta franchise. Her name is Arian Davis. And some of you just might know her from Instagram. She's got a pretty high following and she's an incredible person. And Lord have mercy, she is easy on the eyes. She is sensational. And we have developed a friendship over the course of, I'd say like maybe the last 8 years or so, maybe even a little bit longer. And she's one of my more interesting friends because there's so much that goes on beneath the surface of Arian that a lot of people aren't privy to. She was living in Atlanta for a long time, and I called her the unofficial mayor of Atlanta because when I say she knew everybody, every door was open for her. And just, you know, there was nothing that she couldn't get a hold of. There was nothing that she couldn't accomplish. There was nothing that she couldn't do. And just recently this year in 2020 of all years to do so, she moved to LA. So I wanted to talk to her about why she left the comfort zone and the security blanket of Atlanta, where she was, you know, a very, very big fish in that pond, and came to a brand new city, where she's kind of got to start all over. So I'm kind of fascinated by her desire to do so. So I wanted to ask her about that. And I also just wanted to ask her about how she's been handling 2020. I think that, you know, what I've attempted to do is have guests that are incredibly relatable and have shared experiences with all of you in terms of, you know, the difficulties that we all might have experienced this year. A lot of us have experienced loss. A lot of us have experienced heartbreak. A lot of us have experienced, you know, just our world being turned upside down. And I find that through commiseration and understanding that and feeling seen, it makes it, you know, a little bit more tolerable. And I also wanted to kind of discuss with you guys also using a conversation with a very close personal friend of mine, the reasons why I need to put the show back on hiatus. And I know that I came back and I started the show with a brand new look to the aesthetic. You know, I'd claimed my spot as just being a single host. And I just realized a lot over the course of this year. You know, this year, the death of my mother, the end of this year, and what I am capable of handling and what I am not capable of handling. So I want to share all of that with you, all of the, you know, the things that I've kind of come to terms with myself, but I want to do so in, you know, a conversation that I have with a girlfriend that is light and optimistic, but also very realistic at the same time. So I'm going to invite Arian Davis to join me now. Stay tuned.
What's up, foodies? I have another favorite thing for you, which means savings for your bank account. Okay, so 2020 has been a lot, okay? And the fall and winter season is upon us. We are going to need serious immune system boosters, and that is where Liquid IV comes in. I've talked to you guys about this before because it is one of the things that I absolutely love to add to my water, because one stick added to 16 ounces of water provides the hydration that you would get from 2 to 3 glasses of water, and it tastes amazing. There is acai, there is passion fruit, there's lemon lime. There are so many flavors of Liquid IV for you to choose from, and they taste so amazing. And also, I have to let you guys know that they're also really good for when you have a hangover, because we're super dehydrated. So Liquid IV, one stick to 17 or 16 ounces of water, adds 2 to 3 times the amount of hydration as plain water. Besides adding the hydration that you would get from 2 to 3 glasses of water, plain water alone, it also provides 5 essential vitamins, more vitamin C than an orange, and as much potassium as a banana. And it's healthier than those sugary sports drinks, you know, the ones I'm talking about that aren't necessarily all that fantastic for you. This has no artificial flavors or preservatives and has less sugar than an apple. And it's made with clean ingredients, non-GMO, vegan, and free of gluten, dairy, and soy. So this is how you guys are going to save. Liquid IV is currently available in Walmart in their beverage section, or you can get 25% off by logging on to liquidiv.com and use the checkout code FOODIE. That is FOODIE. So just log on to liquidiv.com. That is LIQUIDIV.com and use the code FOODIE, FOODIE at checkout, and you will get 25% off of your total order.
All right, y'all. So Arian Davis has entered the chat. And you can't see us because we look like we just rolled out of bed.
For sure.
I can't pull it together these days. I mean, and I think you might feel me on this, maybe possibly, but I just can't pull it together these days. It is like an enormous feat of, you know, of energy, et cetera, et cetera, to just like put my face together. You know, I was
thankfully you're pretty enough to where you don't have to do all that shit. So me too.
That was one of the ways that I introduced you, was that you are abnormally beautiful. But
it's so crazy. You always say that shit too.
I mean, because it's sometimes surprising to me, you know, I mean, I like to appreciate my girlfriends from all angles, you know what I'm saying? And sometimes you just have this moment where you look at them and you're like, my God, you are easy on the fucking eyes, you know? So I was explaining to the audience that in the year of 2020, you decide to leave Atlanta and finally make the move to LA. And I was describing you as a very, very big fish in the pond that is Atlanta. We couldn't go anywhere without you knowing 90% of the people wherever the hell we were. And you were just basically like the unofficial mayor of Atlanta to me. And I think it takes a certain amount of bravery and courage to pick up and move across the country to a city like LA. Because LA is not for the faint of heart. People have a very, they have a very specific way of thinking about LA, but it's very different once you get here. I'm like, no, be clear. This is the wild, wild west. Like shit's not all, you know, I guess the manicured lawns and trimmed trees thing makes, you know, it look really beautiful, but no, it's real out here. And you moved here during one of the most insane years that any of us can, you know, have ever experienced. So,
yeah. I made that decision because so much has happened this year personally for me in my life. And I'm just going to say that I made the decision because tomorrow's not promised. And I've always wanted to be in LA. And I just buckled down after the tumultuous year that it's been for me and so many others I know. It's just, I just said, fuck it. I can't keep being complacent and comfortable. And yes, Atlanta is my city for sure. I forever love Atlanta, forever and ever. But I needed something bigger and more. I needed more. I felt like I'd reached my peak in Atlanta. And now in LA, it's like a fresh start. I know I have a tribe of people here, but it'll be a fresh start career-wise, in my love life. Just a different city.
Mm.
just a different city, different people, different energy, different, all of that. And LA is its own, like you said, LA is a beast. It really is. But I'm up for that challenge because I feel like I've made it through this year. What else, girl?
Do not ask what else.
I mean, I'm just saying. I'm sure it's going to be more to come. But I just feel, for me personally, that I have survived this year mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, all of that. I've survived it because I know people that haven't and that are still struggling, which I am too in my own right, but I still have the strength to say, thank you, God, because it could have been different for me.
So eventually I want to take the conversation to talk about, gratitude. Because I think that a lot of people are struggling with the concept of gratitude right now because it's so easy to become focused on what you've lost,
Right.
So I want to talk about that a little bit later. I'm going to put a pin in that, but I wanted to ask you something, in terms of your career, when it comes to your identifiers, I'm familiar with identifiers. I'm familiar with how people introduce me. And a lot of the time I'm introduced, using references that are, a part of my career that are, as far as I'm concerned, very antiquated, to be introduced as Melissa Ford, the video girl. I'm like, wow, I haven't been her for like 16 years, but okay, I'll take it. It is what it is. I'm always interested to find out how people relate to their identifiers, the things that walk into the room before you walk into the room,
Right.
So when I mentioned to a friend of mine that I was going to be talking to you, the response was, oh, the Love and Hip Hop girl. And I was like, I have to ask her how she feels about that, because instantly I went into defense mode and I'm like, yeah. Be so much more than that, motherfucker. And I was like, ooh, hold on. There's a teachable moment here. There's a discussion here. So I'm fascinated by the identifiers that we use for ourselves, that people use for us. As it relates to Love and Hip Hop, because that a large part of the audience might have gotten to know you during, your stint on that. But what are your thoughts about that and who you are and that being used as an identifier for you?
In all honesty, I actually can appreciate it. That is how most people that don't know me but think they know me, that's how they identify with me. But in regard to you mentioning me to someone else, and your personal stance on me is what it is, because you know me. There are people in my life that absolutely will never say Arian the Love and Hip Hop girl, but there are the people that will say, yeah, no, she's more than that. And that's because I've given myself to others more than I have on that show. I didn't give much to the common person what they should know about me. No, that's why my name is Who Is Arian, still on Instagram, Twitter, all of that. There's still so much more to me that I've chosen to just withhold, because it wasn't the time for me to expose all of Arian to the world in that capacity in my eyes. So I'm not mad that, people say, oh, you're Arian from Love and Hip Hop. Yeah, well, I am. I'm not on there anymore, but stay tuned. I say all of that with a smile, because there is so much more to come. So much more. That's why I'm in LA.
I wanted to ask you also, since the conversations kind of moved towards Love and Hip Hop and reality shows just in general, Tamar, she kind of had a very public
breakdown. It was
breakdown, recently. And a lot of people have been very vocal about reality TV and what goes on behind the scenes and the effect that it has on their mental health, on their families, on their personal lives. And, I have my own experiences, but I was interested about your personal experience, because like you said, you didn't really give the audience a whole lot. It was very much a one-dimensional version of Arian on the show. So what are your thoughts when you see things like, Tamar having like this huge breakdown, or people just kind of letting people know, like, you know, going off on a tangent online, like, you all don't know what happens behind the scenes. I mean, at least every 5 minutes, the Real Housewives of Atlanta are having some kind of, you know, discussion online about the behind the scenes and what you don't know and blah, blah, blah. What's your take on reality TV and, you know, the vitriolic kind of reaction that people have once they've been on it?
I think with Tamar's situation in particular, I think a lot of other people in the reality world are struggling and have struggled, but she probably just lost control. And my prayers are with her, have been, and they still will be. But it's real. And I think when you don't go in with a sense of, I'm going to stay in control no matter how big or small my role is, you're going to get fucked up. Mm-hmm. Mentally, it's if you're not mentally prepared going into it, and if you don't have people around you that's mentally preparing, helping you prepare, then yeah, you're going to fall by the wayside. And I can say that firsthand from people that I worked with on the show. And there were times off camera when tears in my garage, like for hours, people would be crying. And I'm not going to just name, you know, specific people, but there were times where I literally had someone tell me I sold my soul to the devil.
Wow.
Literally. In the front of my garage. Mm. I sold my soul to the devil, tears coming down. And all I could do was just hold her and hug her. And yeah, I'm like, well, now you see what's happening. What are you gonna do next? That's all I asked was it was trying sometimes for me too. Mm-hmm. But I always knew my stance. Y'all couldn't threaten me with shit about not being in a scene or not getting paid, because my mental health meant more to me. My integrity meant more to me. My morals, my mother and my grandmother were watching the show. Mm. So I didn't care about all of the in and outs of what everybody else cared about, because they really didn't care at the point. It was like, no, I have to get paid. I have to be in this scene. I have to work. I have to. No, you don't. Yeah. No, you don't. Not if it's making you feel like shit in the bottom of your stomach, say it's okay to say no. Yeah. And I feel like people were afraid, and they got in these contracts too. People got in different contracts. Thank God I have an amazing attorney that we weren't playing that. So we chose our shit very strategically, and we went down by every line, read everything. Mm-hmm. So I just think people got into these contracts, and they get into these contracts and it just fucks them up. It messes you up mentally so badly, but nobody wants to do the work in healing. Mm. So
it's interesting that you use that phrase, sold your soul to the devil, you know, whomever this friend cast member was. I think we can all use our imagination and possibly figure out who it was. But, you know, I think that the lay person watching from the outside looking in, they all think that to participate in Hollywood or being on TV, that's the action that happens, that it's an automatic, like, you know, here's the contract, sign in blood, that's your soul, you just sold it. And that's not how the business works. That's not how your soul, you don't sell off your soul in one fell swoop. It's so rare that something like that happens, you know, for the public to see. I've determined that it's something that happens very incrementally. It's something that happens very, very gradually, where your soul slowly becomes eroded because of the decisions that you make. And your decision-making process is based on your moral compass. And your moral compass at one point was pointing due north, and then slowly but surely through compromises, you know, gradually it starts to slide down, and it's not due north anymore. And then you look up one day and you realize, I don't even know who the fuck is looking back at me.
You're absolutely right. You nailed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you had those moments up? Did I lose you? So in terms of, you know, having those moments where you don't know who's looking back at you in the mirror, have you experienced that, you know, where you saw something kind of getting out of your control, energy around you was, you know, getting a little bit too benevolent?
All of that.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where I drew the line, because I mean more to me than that show does. Mm-hmm. And again, my sanity means more to me mm-hmm. than that show did. Even losing friendships, I still mean more to me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to go down that road.
Was there a minute, like, was there a moment where you said to yourself, that's it? That was the moment where it became too much for me. And you were like, I'm done. Toodles.
I think it was, I don't know necessarily that there was a moment. I think it was mutual for my exiting, because I wasn't going to give them any more than I was already giving. And at that point, that storyline was getting old. So I think them wanting more from me and me saying, oh, hell no. Mm. And it wasn't even just because it had nothing. It did have something to do with pay, but also you couldn't pay me enough to bring my personal life on this particular show, because you don't know the work that I'd been doing to save my relationship and to be rehashing things that unbeknownst to them that we'd worked through. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it wasn't worth it. Like, because nobody had to go home with us but us.
Mm. Very
and,
true.
Yeah, I chose that over anything, because it just wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth it.
There was, when I was doing my reality show, this is a story I've never told anybody.
Spill it, sister.
That people there, they knew what was happening, but it's a story that I've never told the public before. Mm-hmm. And I was dating somebody in the second season of Blood, Sweat, and Heels. And you know, I didn't know if I wanted to put, you know, my personal life like that on display, because we all know what happens. I didn't think that we had developed the strength and stamina in the relationship to withstand, you know, a lot of, you know, public eyes and opinions and that sort of thing. And he was extraordinarily good looking. Like, he was fine as shit. And, you know, a lot of people would have been trying to find this guy, and he was in real estate, so he wouldn't have been hard to find. And did I want a whole bunch of women chasing him? You know, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, didn't want the problems, but I kind of got caught in that whole, you know, the seduction that the producers kind of try to get you, like, all, you know, wrapped up in, of it's gonna make your storyline so much better.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. And so I gave his phone number to the showrunner, whose name was Dave Ruppel. This fucking guy. He walked through my life with dirty boots on, boy. He really mucked up a lot of my life. And we didn't even get to film anything by the time, like, our relationship just literally started to disintegrate after a conversation he'd had with my producer. Because of the pressure that my producer put on him, it just created a very real life problem for me, to the point where this guy said, Melissa, if this is going to be a constant in your life, I don't think that I want to be a part of this. And I was like,
were you expecting something different, though? Honestly.
No.
Okay.
No, no, I wasn't expecting anything different. So
you were wrong for giving them his number.
1,000%. 1,000%. 1,000% wrong for giving him my phone number. He turned out not to be the guy for me. but he was still fine as shit. God damn, he was so good looking. I mean, like, he walked in the room and I was like, bow chicka wow wow. He was really good. What was his name? That doesn't matter.
Anyway. Yeah, I'm like, it doesn't matter. Next.
Okay, so.
That name doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so switching gears. Let's talk about, you know, the fuck show that has been 2020. And I'm always fascinated to ask people, you know, and find out what their answer is, what they thought 2020 was going to be like for them and what it has, you know, the shit show that it has turned into. Some people miraculously are having a great time this year. I have girlfriends, especially girlfriends who are in real estate, that are like, I have never been busier. My bank account is swollen. And I'm like, damn. I have quite a few people who, where professionally, this year has really worked out for them. Personally, this year has worked out for them because they've been able to spend more time with their loved ones and their mates, and it has improved the quality of their relationship. I know some people that have been on unemployment and have made more money in unemployment than they made at their jobs that they were killing themselves working. Mm-hmm. And they get the added bonus of being able to stay home with their loved ones and cultivate those relationships. So those are the good stories. Yep. The vast majority of people, I don't think that that has been what's happened to them. I just remember the end of 2019, everyone was like, yo, fuck this year. Can't wait for 2020.
Take me back to 2019.
And yeah, now everybody's like, 2019 was really amazing.
Considering. And yeah.
Yeah. So what were your 2020 plans prior to the year starting? And what have you accomplished and what got, you know, derailed, if you can, you know, be candid?
Everything that I wanted to do in 2020 definitely came to a halt. Mm-hmm. And it's so crazy that even coming into 2020, the end of 2019 was horrible. My New Year's Eve night, terrible, mm-hmm. terrible. And that takeaway right there, I had the mindset, okay, let me stay positive. Let me try not to think that this is going to be a shitty year because I had a shitty New Year's Eve. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. And it started from New Year's Eve, then my birthday, falling in that ocean in Puerto Rico and thinking I'm damn near dead and my leg is gonna be amputated. Or
okay, wait, hold on. Wait. You gotta give context to the story.
Oh my fucking God.
So to tell everybody what happened with your birthday, you being in Puerto Rico, what happened?
So so my birthday is in January.
She's a Capricorn.
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. You're welcome. I went, my lady and I went to Puerto Rico after my party that I had in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So we were just like, okay, fuck it. We're going to go to Puerto Rico. She and I have been arguing since New Year's Eve. The birthday was good though. We didn't argue on a birthday. And then we get to Puerto Rico. It was our last day there. I want to go out and I want to take a picture close to the ocean. So I stand, or I'm thinking I'm about to stand on this rock. And then all of a sudden this wave, you know, they were having tornadoes and shit around that time a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think there was like a mini tornado while I was out there. Mm-hmm. And then a wave came and then I just plummeted down. She thought I was playing and she thought I was like literally screaming and like it was a joke. So I'm looking at her across the street like, can you please fucking come over here and help me? Because I really do think that I'm about to die. You know, I can be a little bit dramatic. So
no, you get out.
Oh, so I had this fucking hat on, my $300 Goren Brothers hat, my phone. I didn't give a shit about none of that. I did not care. She's like, where's your phone? I don't know. Get me the fuck up. I want to get out. Like I'm screaming, like crying. And I get up and there's this big ass gush in my fucking leg. And when I saw that blood, I wanted to faint like I was Respucia on Norbit, you know, like, oh, but she was like, Arian, it's gonna be okay. It's just the skin. And she trying to be all calm and okay, girl, but do you see that? And that's gonna stay there. Like, do you know that I like to wear my legs out? I'm the vanity side of me started coming because I was alive at that point. But now it's like, what the fuck, this ugly ass scar. So we get back to the hotel and we were gonna go to an emergency, like the urgent care or whatever. But luckily and crazily, this girl and her dad were leaving out of our hotel. And she was like, she saw her wheeling me in. She's like, oh my God, I'm a nurse.
Oh, wow.
I said, wait, huh? Her dad was like, we have to go. She was like, I'm not gonna leave her. And she stayed, she helped, she, you know, remedied the sore, I mean, the scar. It was so fucking crazy. I was like, do I have to go anywhere? She was like, no. I've taken care of it all for you. I said, do I owe you anything? She's like, what the fuck? No, I don't. I said, well, thank you so very much, Melissa. I swear I limped. I limped and limped and limped and limped. I drank so much. I told her to find me some drugs to take, give me the alcohol. Mm-hmm. Bitch, I went out the same night. I was like, it's still my birthday. Mm. The pain subsided for a minute.
That sounds like a hilarious, hilarious birthday.
Ooh. Then the next day, going to the airport, horrible. Like, why the fuck did I do that? Why did I drink all that alcohol? Why did I take these pain meds that night, so many of them? Mm-hmm. And then the next day, it was just a shit show at the airport.
So this is how the year began for you.
It began, horribly. And then in February, my dad died. Mm-hmm. That happened. He and my relationship with him was kind of estranged, but I was angry. Mm-hmm. I was really angry.
Angry with him?
That and the situation, like, really, how dare you die? And that was the selfishness of me that I had to really let go, because Arian, it's no need to hold on to anger anymore. He's not here. Mm-hmm. You can't be mad. But in the back of my mind, I kept thinking, I can be mad, because I didn't ask you to be my father. I didn't ask for any of that. I didn't ask you to abandon me because you didn't like my mom. Mm-hmm. You know, that has nothing to do with me, but you treated me like shit. Mm. And here I am really mourning over you. And I always used to say, Melissa, I swear on everything I love, if this nigga died, I don't even think I would go to his funeral. I don't think I would care. And then all of a sudden, it completely changed.
Yeah, it does.
I did care.
Yeah, grief has a way of completely surprising us. And it has a way of surprising us in a way that we go through a whole entire process of self-discovery. We find out things about ourselves during the grief process, especially when it's apparent, because whether they were in our lives or not, they're still an extension of us. They're the reason why we're even here. So there is that, you know, that intensely strong connection. You lost your father. I lost my mother. So I went through, a lot of what you experienced. I experienced it too. And the anger was the thing that was the most surprising, and it was the hardest part of it. Like the mental anguish attached to the anger. Anger at myself, anger that she's gone, just finding any reason just to be fucking angry. And just the fact that the grief, like, you know, the cycle of grief, the whole five things that it is, you know, what is it? Shock, anger, denial, bargaining and acceptance, or something like that. That's like the five stages, and people think it's very linear. In how you experience it. And it's not, it's cyclical. One day you can, you know, be angry, and the other day you're back to shock. And the other day you're in denial, and then you have a feeling of acceptance, and you're like, okay, I've got it. And then the next day it starts all over again. And it's very, very challenging.
That was a horrible roller coaster ride. Mm-hmm. All of those emotions that you've just mentioned,
where are you now with the process, you know, with your dad's passing and maybe some peace that you've made with it, or, you know, are you still kind of in the weeds and, you know, experiencing difficulties, you know, with memories and anguish attached to them? Like, where are you with it?
I am trying my best to be at peace, because he can't come back. So I try to have the conversations with he and God and myself, and let God be our therapist, because I can't hold on to the anger. Like, it'll fester in me, and then that anger will go somewhere else, and I'll be taking it out on someone else, which I have before, and I apologize to whomever I've done that to. I'm still healing. I'm still trying to heal from the anger. And the neglect and the abandonment and the whys that are never going to be answered for real. Mm. But yeah, just trying to be a real adult about it. Because, you know, in moments like this, people can get real childish and petty.
But, you know, I it's interesting that you say that, because one thing that I did personally discover was your inner child really starts to get loud at this moment, you know, and I think that the vast majority of us spend a lot of time, you know, feeling like, oh, I have to adult. I'm an adult now. And you can't acknowledge the inner child that's still in you, right. But it's there and it's never really going to go anywhere. And we need, I think collectively, we would do a whole lot better as a society and as individuals within a society, if we started to pay a little bit more attention to our inner child and why, and why they're throwing a tantrum and why they're, you know, acting the way that they are. It needs to be, you know, given, addressed in a patient, loving manner. And using myself as an example, I've been terrible, terrible to myself and to my inner child. I have told that motherfucker to shut up. I've told that motherfucker, you don't have a place to speak. I have told my inner child that it was unworthy. And it was only after the death of my mother that I realized, if I do not care for this child inside of me, no one will, because she just died. The only person that really truly cared about that child. So I think that, you know, just listening to you, that's what you are experiencing, is reconnecting with the notion that you have an inner child and that it needs time and space to heal, and it needs love and attention and comforting.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. And I wasn't saying, you know, that being childish and petty, I was talking necessarily about the anger of it all. Mm-hmm. Like you're so right. My inner child and I have a very close relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's because I had a mom that allowed that child to be okay even when I wasn't. And it wasn't just the anger towards my dad, even as a kid, that I held on to, because I had such a great childhood even still. But as a little girl that was into so much, I always wanted my dad there too, but I just knew, like, this nigga never gonna show up. He's never gonna show up, but my granddad did, and my stepdad did. Mm-hmm. And now I have a new stepdad and he's always there. So, you know, I used to always think, damn, it's his loss, because I'm a great daughter. Mm-hmm. I'm a great granddaughter. I'm a great niece, you know? Mm-hmm. So I wanted him to experience my greatness just as a human being. And I think that was part of my anger. Like, why don't you want to experience me? Yeah. Like, you're that angry and I have nothing to do with my mom. I don't have that relationship. I don't have you guys' relationship.
Why am I suffering for it?
Yeah. Why am I suffering?
Yeah.
So that's where my anger lies.
What's up, everybody? I have another favorite thing for you, which also means savings for your bank account. Now, are you trying to figure out the most amazing gift that you could give to friends and family that you might not have been able to gather with over the course of this past year? I have a suggestion for you. I am personally going to be giving my loved ones one of the most meaningful gifts that I can give, and that is a chance to tell their stories and share memories with StoryWorth. StoryWorth is an online service that helps your loved ones share stories through thought-provoking questions about their memories and personal thoughts. It's a fun new way to engage with family, especially those that you can't see in person. I actually used this with my mom while she was still here, and it basically just asked my mom questions that I didn't know the answers to. Things like, what was her favorite childhood memory? Or what was one of the things that she learned from her mother? Or what was her first family vacation? These were some of the questions that were posed by StoryWorth that my mom was able to answer. Every week, StoryWorth emails your family member different story prompts, questions you've never thought to ask. So after StoryWorth emails you all of these questions, after 1 year, StoryWorth will compile all of your stories, including pictures, into a beautiful keepsake book that is shipped for free. So this year, if you are looking for the perfect gift to give your loved ones, you can give them the gift of spending time together wherever you live with StoryWorth. You can get started right away with no shipping required by going to storyworth.com. That is storyworth.com/foodie. That's the discount code that you use to get 10% off of your first purchase. So that is storyworth.com/foodie for 10% off of your purchase.
Did you find, or did you feel at certain times like you were kind of losing your mind?
Yes. And you know why I was losing my mind? Mm. Let me tell you exactly why. Because I didn't know if he was really my dad.
Mm. Well, that's a whole other, you know, layer.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. So I'm feeling all these feelings and it's like, damn, am I feeling these for no reason? Like, are you really my, because he thought he made it very clear to certain people in my family that I wasn't his.
Mm. Mm. So. With my own personal experiences, I wanted to chart them in order to be able to tell people mm-hmm. how to handle a friend who is in the grieving process.
Mm-hmm.
Because I found that I found that some friends did not want to communicate with me at all because they were afraid of saying the wrong thing. And I said, well, silence is the wrong thing when something like this has happened. Just an FYI, if you have no idea what the words are, you can literally say those exact words. I don't know what to say to you. I am afraid of saying the wrong thing. I just want to tell you that I love you. And in any way, shape, or form, I can be there for you. I am there. Use me. That's all you got to say to somebody who's going.
But you know what, Mel? Mm. Everybody may not feel like that. Even if we consider them friends,
right.
They may not feel like, oh, I'm going to be there for you if you need me. So
I definitely got that memo.
I would rather you not say anything mm-hmm. because then if I need to lean on you and you're not giving me the reciprocity as a friend that I need, mm-hmm. yeah, it's okay. Cool. Mm-hmm. I know where to keep you mm-hmm. now.
Oh, well, no, the friends who don't really want to serve as like a shoulder and an ear, yeah. they should definitely not say those words.
Absolutely.
Those are for the friends that don't know what to say, are afraid of saying the wrong thing, but want to be there for you. They just don't know how. That's for them. There's going to be other people that you will be shocked by how little grace and compassion they offer you.
Right.
That was something else that I was completely shocked by. I have felt as close to insanity this year as I've ever felt in my entire life. You know, mm-hmm. I consider myself to be a pretty sane person,
you have crazy moments though. You know, you're a little crazy, a little bit, just a little.
If it involved vodka and a table inside of a club, you know, and that's the only time. But no, I mean, I think that grief should be categorized as a form of mental instability because I felt like a wild-eyed animal. Constantly hypervigilant about everything and so emotionally raw and so mentally anguished that I'm sorry, as far as I'm concerned, I don't really feel like I should have been held accountable for a whole lot. I didn't kill anybody. I didn't, I didn't have like heinous behavior, but sometimes I would have like these outbursts.
Right.
And those are kind of, those are slightly like, they're not really controllable at this time. You know what I mean? You're in such a state of, you know, mental anguish and panic and emotional rawness that, yeah, your emotions are all over the place. And I think this is the grace and compassion that I would hope that, you know, people had for their friends that I didn't necessarily, experience from people that I held you know, near and dear to my heart. But, you know, that's a whole other thing. I digress on that. I wanted to, you know, move forward into, you know,
I was just about to say move, you have to move forward. And I understand. And I wasn't trying to be non-compassionate about those ones that weren't, but I'm just saying, you know where you stand with certain people. And it's cool. People are really showing their true colors this year. And
that is exactly the truth. That was what I wanted to segue into, you know, is that a lot of people have shown their true colors this year. Mm-hmm. A lot of, I cannot tell you how many people I've spoken to that have experienced abandonment, a sense of betrayal, a sense of deceit, you know, things going on behind their back. I know I definitely have. I know that I'm very well aware of what that is. But, you know, how do you not let something like that harden you? You know, if you have experienced it this year, which I'm sure you have, how do you move forward and not let it harden you when somebody that you held near and dear to your heart basically just kind of shows you that they did not consider you the way that you considered them?
Well, with a lot of tequila, a lot of rosé, a lot of tacos. Seriously, it's hurtful and it's very painful, but I feel like this year wasn't for the faint of them. So I the perseverance through all the bullshit is just on another level for me. Mm-hmm. And I had to put on my big girl pants way too many times before, but this year they're bigger and wider and I have to keep jumping in them bitches.
It depends.
Like, yeah, like for real, over and over and over again. So it's sad to say that I feel like I become numb mm-hmm. to certain situations, but I have. And as disheartening as they may be, as heartbroken as I may be from certain things, I still have to find a way to keep it fucking moving, because if I lost you, that means that somebody else coming. Mm-hmm. And I try to look at situations like that in that positive light, or try to stay optimistic, like, damn, I really am gonna miss you. And if the solar return brings you back to me, cool. But right now, if this isn't our time, I'm gonna let it go. I can't keep fighting for relationships in any capacity mm-hmm. if you're not giving me the same energy.
Right.
If it's not reciprocated, there's no reciprocity in a relationship, any relationship. Mm-hmm. I'm out. I'll take the hurt. I'll take the pain, but I can get over that. Mm-hmm. I can get over it. And again, I just feel like maybe this is a door opening for something better to come in. And not saying that these people, whoever or whatever the situations were horrible, but with growth comes change. Mm-hmm. So maybe I am growing out of certain situationships and, mm-hmm. you know, it's just different. So
go ahead.
No, I just think with, especially this year, Mel, mm-hmm. like it's just been too trying, mm-hmm. too fucking trying.
Yeah.
So I just have to really find a way to always, okay. Mm-hmm. You ask a question, you ask it, I'll push it out there. If I had done something wrong to someone, please let me know. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not perfect either. Mm-hmm. I'm not the perfect friend. I know I'm a great friend. I'm not perfect in relationships, but I know I'm a great girlfriend, you know, but I just, you know, communication is key mm-hmm. to life. So I don't know. I got to keep it fucking moving now. I do.
You know, I think since last year, there's been, you know, this, you know, huge transition away from mental health being stigmatized to being, you know, the cause célèbre. You know, it's something that everyone's talking about now.
Now.
Now, you know, where it was something that we shied away from, you know, for as long as I can remember, but now it's something that everybody's talking about. It's everybody's posting a meme about it, you know, whatever the case is. You know, how have you kind of guarded your mental health this year through your dad's passing and the hardships that, you know, came along with moving, because, you know, death and moving, those are two of like the five biggest stressors in life. And you moved across the damn country.
I did.
You know? So how have you been guarding your mental health? What are some of your self-care and self-love practices? You know, I know that everybody's always looking for something new to add to their, you know, personal repertoire, myself included. So what are some of the things that you do to guard your mental health, and to, you know, give yourself, you know, what are some of your self-care and self-love tips?
Of course, my number one is talks with God. Like every morning I have to wake up because I have crazy dreams a lot this year. So I have to wake up and have the conversations with God. And on some days I will meditate, and it's not a lot of times, but I'm trying to get back into it. But I feel like my mind is just always over, always all over the place. So I try to bring my calmness by, like, I'll go buy flowers and plants also. Like that's a sign, a way of dealing and healing with what's happening. Cooking is therapeutic for me. Also, talks with my therapist too. I've been going to therapy for a while now. Also, like right after, during the show, like I had to find a therapist, because I wasn't going to be able to just stay in the control that I thought I had on myself, but I did, thanks to her. Also, I've never really talked about suicide to, you know, but it's heavy in our community now. It's really heavy. And I was in the ninth grade when I attempted suicide. Nobody knows that, but I did it as a cry for attention from my mom. But I literally took those pills thinking, like, so I think back to that little girl too, when I was in the ninth grade, and I'm like, I'm never going to get to that place again. No matter what's happening, no matter what I'm feeling, no matter how sad I may feel or how I feel like the world is crashing down on me, I can't get to a place where it's like I'm about to say, fuck it. You know? So I try to do things for me, and learning to that it's okay to say no to people, because when people are constantly pulling and pulling and pulling from you, but nobody wants to give you anything back when you really need them. I've learned that it's okay, Arian. Like, just be a little selfish for yourself and take that time that you need, so you don't run yourself ragged. Like, oh shit, I gotta make sure that my sister is okay. I have to make sure that my brother is fine. You know, no. No, that's why I moved. Like I made that choice because, I let me just get the fuck up and out. Let me go. So, I struggle sometimes with the unknown. But I know that God has a plan for me, and He's never gonna turn His back on me. And that's what keeps me going. That faith, just knowing like it's gonna be all right, Arian. And I have to tell myself that every morning. I do.
It's it's not even about, you know, being selfish. It's just about pouring back into your cup, because sometimes sometimes your cup is on empty, you know. And in order to pour into other people's cup, you can't pour from an empty cup. I mean, it's a, that is a meme, but it is actually the truth. And, you know, I wanted to talk to you on this particular episode because, you know, we are close girlfriends. I admired you before we even became girlfriends. We had mutual
friends.
And now we've been like friends for like what, like 8-9 years or something it like that been. At this point. And you know, we share really incredible girlfriends. Our sister circle's pretty fucking awesome.
It
is. With really authentic women. And that's what I appreciate, is that we can be completely transparent and honest and candid with each other and know that it's not going to end the relationship. We can have those constructive critiques within the group. And And then we get right back. We get right back.
And I can say I thoroughly appreciate the fact that I have you here. Like, I have you here in LA. You're part of, you know, like, yes, okay, I have people, but you are definitely one that I know. It's, I can call Mel and, okay.
You can call Mel. She got another bedroom. Come sleep over. Bring the dog. Bring Hope. bring tacos. Bring it all. And let's just have a sleepover in front of the TV in the fireplace and let that sleepover last like a week if we can't do it in real life.
We're about to have, that's about to happen again. You do know that.
No, right? I know. Okay. I know. COVID is ravaging the country yet again. And some, you know, people have lost loved ones all over again. It's fucked up. But I also wanted to have this, you know, this episode with you because it's my way of also telling the audience who I have come to like love and adore. They've held me down, you know, just had my back and whatnot. And I wanted to be very transparent with my audience and know, which is something that, you know, that I came back to work too fast.
Yeah.
I did not take enough time to care for myself and find the right therapist to handle my level of grief. I have been struggling behind the scenes to produce the show. And it just seems like everything has just fallen apart. And you know, so, you know, they're saying, you know, things have to fall apart in order to fall back together, whatever the case
back
is.
Back together, yeah.
And in order for me to do that, I know that I need to put the show back on hold to address what I did not address before, which was I came back to work too soon. I didn't get the grief counseling that I needed. I didn't get the help that I needed. And I always want to be a walking, living example of the things that I preach about.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. And so as a final episode, I just, you know, I wanted to do this with somebody that I love, that I cherish, that I care about.
I feel so honored and so special. That is amazing. And I am commending you taking this time because you need to.
Yeah.
And I've seen it all over you.
You have. You've seen me fall apart in my car to where we have to pull over because I am sobbing and I physically just I can't. I'm having difficulty managing life. And in order for me to be able to manage the intricacies of life, the big stuff, I got to put the pieces back together for the little stuff, the everyday stuff.
You got to take care of you, boo. You have to, in order for this train to keep running, especially. So take all the time you need. It's going to be here.
Yeah.
The
one thing I wanted to end everything off of is the concept of gratitude. And for me, I'm always fascinated by people who wake up and gratitude is the attitude every day because I've struggled to be grateful for, you know, my life and the things in it because it's just so much easier to focus on the bad shit. It's so much easier to default towards the negative. And so I'm always interested to find out what gratitude means to others. And how they kind of make that a major factor in their everyday lives, you know. So that was kind of a question. What is gratitude towards you, and how do you? What does it feel like to you? What do you say? What are the things that you say that let the universe know that you are eternally grateful?
This goes back to my talks with God and me waking up and having certain affirmations in my mind that I don't say out loud, which I need to start doing. Mm-hmm. But I can say I'm grateful for waking up. Mm-hmm. In my head, but I need to start saying it out loud for sure. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like sometimes when I'm going to sleep that there's a possibility that I may not wake up based off of just what's happening around me. So I have to be grateful for the fact that I have someone that I can sleep with at night or that can hold me and cuddle me because there are people that don't. Mm-hmm. And at this point in time in my life, I absolutely need it. And I've never just flat out said that I needed someone, mm-hmm. but I'm grateful for her. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful that I can still put food on my table because work has been scarce. Mm-hmm. There's been little to no work, but I've been making it. I've been hustling and figuring it the fuck out, which is what I do. Mm-hmm. But there are people that can't say that. So I have to be grateful for the ones that can't say that they're grateful. And whatever I can do to help someone else, even if it's just a stranger. Like yesterday, I gave somebody this whole plate of shit that I didn't even want. I just bought it, but I didn't care about the fucking plate. Mm-hmm. But even just the smallest things of what I can possibly do, that is gratitude to me. Mm-hmm. Just being able to say that I'm grateful is in itself a blessing because it's hard. It's absolutely hard. So the people that wake up and can say gratitude is my attitude every fucking day, God bless your beautiful souls. Mm-hmm. And I mean that. Yeah. Like, God bless you, because I want to get to that place where it's almost like they don't have a care in the world. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I want to feel like that, even though I know that there are cares in the world, but I do want to get to that place where every day I can say I'm smiling, even in the midst of anger or stress or depression or anything. I want to still be grateful wholeheartedly.
Well, I'm going to end the show with telling you a little story and telling the audience a little story about how I rediscovered gratitude.
Okay.
I had been searching for it. Everybody who knows, you know, what's going on in my personal life, you know, has been encouraging me to feel grateful that I got the last few days with my mom and that we got to talk, grateful that my mom left me in a better financial position than I was prior to, but you know, whatever the case is, just reasons to feel grateful. And I could not feel it. All I could feel was victimized. All I could feel was anger. All I could feel was just rage and sadness. And I was slowly but surely being crippled by it. And, you know, you saw this, but on my birthday, we went to Beauty in Essex. You were one of the other 9 people that were there with me. And when I looked at the table, you know, Roxy was there, Alicia Renee was there, my friend Michael Williams was there, Damien was there, my friend Leah, you know, I looked at the table and I said to myself, I was like, these people love me. And they've shown me in so many ways over the course of years that they love me. And I felt like I had, you know, like it was a source of light for me, but that's not the story. The story is that when I left Beauty in Essex, and for all of you who have never been to LA and don't know what Beauty in Essex is, Beauty in Essex is a restaurant that's part of the Tao Group. Tao is a big fancy restaurant that started in New York and is now in Las Vegas and also in LA. Here in LA, on a street called Selma in between Wilcox and Cahuenga, there is just, it's party life. Like it's Tao right next to the Dream Hotel, which has the Highline Room up there upstairs. And Beauty in Essex. And so this street is constantly busy. The pomp, the circumstance, the excess, the cars driving down the street, Lamborghinis, just Ferraris, all this bullshit, you know? Mm-hmm. There's just people walking in and out, beautiful people, just girls in short skirts and guys. And it's just, it looks like Instagram fucking exploded on this street. That's what it looks like.
Yep.
And I was exiting the restaurant. You all had left. It was just me and my girlfriend, Leah. And I was getting into her car and I looked back towards the sidewalk and I saw an older man and he was hunched over and he was hobbling along with a cane. And the cane was not proportioned to his height. It was bullshit. It didn't even have that little rubber stopper on the bottom. And he looked like he was in physical pain and he looked like he needed help. And I preface this by saying, you do not normally think about stopping to help a stranger in Hollywood Hollywood is grimy. Yeah, like this definitely. Person could have a communicable disease. They could be a drug addict, strung out, mentally dysfunctional, and can lash out on you. It's very dangerous to just randomly talk to a stranger who might be home. It's just not what you do.
Right.
But there was something about this man that said I had to help him. And it was screaming at me. And I looked at my girlfriend, Leah, and I said, Leah, do you see that man over there? And she said, yeah. And I was like, something's telling me we have to help him. And she said, okay, let's go. And if you just would, if you saw what the street looked like, just all these people, just beautiful people, and no one noticed or paid attention to this man, it was like, it was so paradoxical the way that it just looked. And so we went across the street, just to condense the story. We talked to him and it turned out that his name was Ken and he was a war vet and he was having a very severe outbreak of gout. And if you don't know what gout is an extremely painful condition. His feet, like it's why he looked like he was walking very slowly because gout basically feels like you're walking on shards of glass and hot coals.
Right.
And so he had been released from the VA hospital. Why, I don't know, because he clearly still needed medical attention. And he was looking for a hotel because he'd been recently kicked out of the room that he was renting. She was a Trump supporter. He supported Biden on his Facebook page. She didn't like it. She kicked him out. So he had nowhere to go. So he was looking for this hostel. And it turned out it was right around the corner, but the Uber driver had just basically thrown him out of the car. So Lee and I asked the bouncer to charge his phone for a couple of minutes in order for us to find out where the hostel was. We ended up figuring it out while his phone was charging. And we ended up, you know, putting him in the car with us and drove him around the corner to the hostel. Mm-hmm. We got upstairs and Leah paid for the first night of him being at this hostel. And I took his knapsack and I walked ahead to the room that we'd rented for him, open up the door, put his knapsack on the night table beside his bed, put the remote beside the bed so that he didn't have to like get up and reach for anything. And I just kind of looked around this room and it was bare bones. It was just a bed, a wooden night table, a bathroom. There was nothing, special. It was a hostel.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, circumstances in life are just so fragile that there is very little that separates me from this man. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had my own experiences with not having a place to live. I've had my own experiences where I barely had two pennies to rub together in my pockets. Like I've had my own experiences that mirrored this situation. Right. And it made me realize, Melissa, you better get a fucking grip on what gratitude really actually is, because if you keep on going down this dark hallway, you know, figurative dark hallway, you are going to become crippled by your anger, your rage, and your self-victimization.
Yeah.
And so we left him in left him to the room and we told him we were going to come back for him the next day. We wanted to bring him a brand new cane that was, a lot more functional. And we wanted to take him back to the hospital because he needed more medical attention, but he also needed rest. And right. So the next morning I woke up and on my actual birthday, I woke up to Biden being elected the president.
Yeah.
And I started crying because the reign of terror is over. And I called Leah and I said, are you ready to go see Ken again? She was like, I already have the cane in the car. And she came and picked me up and we picked him up some breakfast and we took it to him. And we just told him, he let us know that the VA was going to pay for his, housing as of Monday, but he had nowhere to go for the next couple of days. And I said, okay, well, I've already taken care of the room for the rest of the weekend. So you've got that. And we're going to take you to the VA hospital. And he said to us, why are you guys doing this? And we were like, well, why not? And he said, because you don't have to. And we said, well, isn't that the exact reason why you should help somebody? Because you don't have to, because you want to. It's kind of like, that meme, be the change that you want to see in the world, right. And
You and these memes, I don't see all these memes you're talking about.
I spent way too much time on motherfucking Instagram and just, you know, I do. But to me, Ken was my birthday present.
That was dope. That was very sweet.
The experience that I had and what I was given from this experience and what I believed happened. If this was my mother conspiring with the universe and God to say, you got to help my child. She's not okay. And she has to be okay. It's just what I choose to believe happened. Because
it changed
everything for me. And it's
a beautiful thing though, Mel. You have to know that this is just only the beginning. This is beautiful. This is so dope. And it happened on your day.
It wasn't an accident.
It wasn't any of that. That's what you were supposed to do.
Yeah.
And this is where the universe came in and spoke to you. So yeah.
Yeah.
That's so fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So we're going to start our love and light together.
Yeah.
We're going to start it all together. I'm here.
Yes.
You're here.
Yes.
Let's keep it going. I'm about to do some stuff with LA Mission too. So if you want in on that,
you don't even need to ask. Say less. Okay. Say less. Okay. It's happening, and you're not going to see this on our Instagram pages because it's not meant for public consumption. But it's just you know, it be the change that you want to see in the world. That's realistically what it is. But I gained more from this experience than I think anybody else did. Specifically Ken, but I want to leave off with saying, I thank you guys so much from the bottom of my heart. I adore I'm here for the food, foodies, the audience. You guys are so awesome for me. I am going to do all of the necessary work in order to gain my sense of strength and stability back in order to bring the show back in a way
and kill this shit. You're going to come back and kill it
and kill this stuff. So we'll be back in January. I thank you guys so much for your patience, your love, your understanding and everything. Arian, I thank you so much for being my wrap up of the season episode. You're the bomb. I love you.
I love you too.
I'm probably going to see you tomorrow when I go come pick up your dog. Because I'm going to be auntie and dog sitting.
Yes, she is. I love you.
I love you too. Okay. Thank you. Bye, guys. Take care.
Bye, guys.